Good morning. We are with Brian Wilson, the general manager of
North Coast Unified Air Quality Management District, or you can call us just North Coast Air Quality.
And we'll try to figure out what that means as soon as we find out why we say that. Are you ready?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I am. Although I'm a big subscriber to Liars Club, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so if I get stuck, I may have to do
it. All right. Do you prefer geese or chickens?
Oh, chickens.
All right. Eggs Benedict. Oh. Why do we call it Eggs Benedict? Well, the other one was cooking a goose, so...
Benedict will work. Benedict Arnold comes to mind, so probably something around that, but then that's not a good thing. You're supposed to like Eggs Benedict, so... See, I'm already slipping into the Liars Club thing. don't know.
All right. Legend suggests that Saint Benedict is responsible for the combination of foods that seem to bear his name. Oral tradition, long current in greater New York City, credits the term to a wealthy Samuel Benedict, about whom little is known. Many scholars say that neither the saint nor the New Yorker had anything to do with creating and naming the perennially popular dish. Instead, they say it stems directly from the culinary interest of banker yachtsman E.C. Benedict. So you had three chances. You blew them all.
Yeah.
He inherited a Connecticut fortune and reached its zenith of power in commercial circles around the turn of the century. Benedict then began spending more and more time on the water. It was on his yacht, says an account that stems from about 1902, that the man whom friends called Commodore insisted that hollandaise sauce be added to the long standard poached eggs on toast with ham.
Okay.
When guests tried the new delicacy, they took to it like ducks to water. It says here.
Well, that was your other question.
Yes, yes. As a result, we still use the water-loving banker's name to designate the dish that is high on the list of many favorite foods.
Hmm.
I think I've
not
had it
high
once.
On my, yeah, I was going to say it's not high on my favorite.
Hollandaise sauce. Like Grandma whipped that on asparagus, too. It was like, ugh.
We have about 20, 30 chickens, so yeah, it's just... Oh. Whatever you eat.
Yeah. Whoever's good. Moving slow, it's barbecue.
Yeah, or if the egg is still good after you crack it.
Yeah. That's another level of pain. So what do you, I mean, air quality is something that there must be a national or state standard of what quality is. But so many people have different personal definitions. It's like good tasting water.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know our water here locally supposed to test out great versus other, but it's still kind of personal. What is the technical of air quality?
So air quality in our area here, because we're one of 35 air districts in the state, and so our jurisdictions, Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity County. And so,
which is always weird that Trinity got involved.
Yeah.
I mean, normally it's Shasta Trinity, right?
Yeah. We used to be part of just Humboldt County, but we're a three-county jurisdiction, so we're not we're unified, hence the name in there. But the air quality here is very good by all the state standards. There's federal standards and state standards. The only thing that this area is out of attainment for, and I'm just talking about Humboldt County, is the state PM10 standard, particulate matter standard for 10 microns or smaller. Which is surprising. I mean, that's been the same for quite some time. I'm from Southern California originally, and I'm sure lots of the listeners are from Bay Area, Sac Metro, large air districts. And they have lots of issues that we don't have here, thank goodness, you know, ozone and other things. And that particulate matter up here has been consistent for a while. Going back for the people that remember it.
TP burners and the pulp mill.
Yep,
I mean, that kind of makes sense, but it's still around?
And it's more than that. It's sea salt, even, which is something that we particularly...
Not going to get rid of that.
No, exactly. Right. And that's something that we talked with the state about, and we would like to not have that show up on filters. You can take a filter and you can have it examined for... determining what's on it, you know, it's a particulate matter. So you can look at it and go, is it road dust? Is it sawdust? Is it, you know, whatever? Is it wood debris? That kind of thing. And certainly, you know, salt shouldn't be part of it. And some of our other air districts try to fight that as well, which is Monterey and some of the other ones.
The other coastal ones?
Yes.
Yeah, amazing.
You want to be in attainment. You don't want to have to do things to ratchet it down to come into attainment. But there's more things here other than just sawdust. It's road dust. It's lots of things that over time...
Pollen?
That too, yeah. Lots of things. And so as far as, you know, air quality, it's very good up here. And certainly it's our biggest challenges by far. And I thought you were going to ask me is what keeps you up at night. Wildfire smoke. Can't control that. But we do allow prescribed burns. And that is hopefully to prevent those catastrophic amounts of smoke.
Yeah, the big boys.
But it kind of gets into the idea of acute versus chronic, you know, short-term, long-term kind of thing, you know. And up here, road dust is certainly a big part of it. We got a lot of unpaved roads. It's amazing how much all of it, you know, gets picked up. And then also placement of monitors is very important.
Sampling location.
Yeah, I mean, because you're sampling a little speck in the air at a location, you know, someone burning a wood stove nearby. And wood stoves is another big challenge up here, and that's probably that's a seasonal challenge, probably from November to, say, about February. And then wildfires, you know, the rest of the time, although it's becoming more of the year than the season. But we get involved in all those. But in general, air quality is very good up here. We'd like to kind of keep it that way. And as a regulator, we don't want to overregulate, which may be why we kind of fly under the radar for most things. We try to strike a balance because we regulate all sorts of things, from crematories, gas stations, PG&E power plant, the mills, everything.
I would think like the gas fumes. You know, like when you're filling up your tank,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of see the vapors or a little bit of that, and you go, well, okay, I mean, how are you going to avoid it?
Yes.
Okay, but some of those types of things I would suspect are just there, or if you know, somebody has a leaky car.
Mm-hmm. The smog, right? Exhaust, or if it's, you know, rolling coal or, you know, out of a diesel truck or whatever, all that adds up, although it's not, you know, extreme amount on in and of its own.
But what about, like, fireplaces? I know that there was a discussion, and maybe it's happened in some of the metropolitan areas, where you can't have a fireplace anymore.
True. Right.
Is that part of this whole area?
That's what generally happens over time when an air district is reaching out for trying to ratchet down or start to make the air better. You know, our world is measured in years and in minute particles, if you think about it. It's going to take years, even if you put in a plan to retrofit all the wood stoves in an area. I mean, how many people do we have in all three counties, 8,000 square miles? I don't know, 150, 170,000? You know, who has the money to do it? It's expensive. It's going to take time. You start now, see in 50 years, maybe there might be some improvements to EPA wood stoves, even if everyone can afford it.
Regardless of what the governor says.
Yes, right. Yeah.
KINS, and News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Wilson from the Air District.
North Coast Air Quality.
Well, I just say Air District.
That works, too.
Kind of, yeah. Not the Dirt District.
No.
The Air District.
No,
the air. Pollen is something I think a lot of folks are aware of because of seasonal allergies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you some get it, some don't, whether it's ferns or Monterey pines or whatever it is, the grasses that trigger. Pollen count. Is that something that anybody cares about up in our area?
It's not something we get into. And indoor air quality is something that we don't get into. Certainly we have, help folks pick out, you know, HEPA filters and that kind of thing. But indoor air quality isn't something we regulate.
Are there some areas that do
no.
you pay attention to that stuff?
No. Air districts typically, like for us, the main thing we regulate is stationary sources, if you will. And that's why the
smokestacks.
smokestacks, crematories, gas stations, mills, that kind of thing, where we kind of draw the line of responsibility with the Air Resources Board, the California Air Resources Board, or CARB. Everyone knows them for the smog and for on truck and off on road and off road trucks and buses and that kind of thing, but also transit, and they also start getting into products. CARB does legislating, you know, what kind of paints can be around and what kind of weed whackery you can have throughout the state, whereas we tend to focus more on fixed type stationary sources. And then the other component is also for us is open burning and prescribed burning.
So the burn permit is through your office rather than through like the Forest Service or
correct
Cal Fire or whoever the local jurisdiction might be?
It's changing. There's a new change afoot. This is coming about with all the wildfires to kind of make things a little more consistent. In the past, folks didn't have to get a permit through Cal Fire, but now Cal Fire has an online program where you can actually get it. But an air quality permit is needed year-round to burn in addition to the Cal Fire permit. Cal Fire typically has their permits because they're looking at certain periods of the time during the burn ban or prior to and then just after of. Because they want to know, is someone going to burn something that's going to be causing a problem from a, fire safety perspective, whereas we look at it from an air quality
Do we have to respond to that plume of smoke or not?
Right.
Yeah.
And years ago.
It used to be.
Yeah.
They just wanted to know if you were going to be doing it so they wouldn't get too excited.
Exactly. And that's still the case. We'll issue a burn permit and we'll ask that the folks call Cal Fire, especially for the larger burn permits, what we call the non-standard, to let them know in advance if they're going to be doing a burn.
Because that's like the big ones we see up on the hill.
You see the little plume going up, and that way Cal Fire knows, no, that's probably, and they'll look it up on their map, probably something that's been approved. And there's a whole lot of process that goes into what we do with folks when there's a prescribed burn, which we can get into as well. But, the burn permits are required by the air district year-round, and we ensure folks burn the right thing. We call it non-approved combustibles, but that's, don't burn treated timber, don't burn. We've gone to different sites. People burn, bowling balls, plastic white resin chairs.
Bowling balls?
Yes, they do melt. Yeah, we have a Hall of Fame pictures.
Holy cow, I wonder at what point? I mean, it's got to be fairly hot, I would think.
People put things in piles and in burn barrels, and they, burn the insulation off wires to get the copper. Or they'll chainsaw a motorhome in half and throw the flake on a fire, and whatever's left, scrap up together. People just do the darndest bizarre things. Not only is it not great for the neighbor, it's not good for the air, but they're also, it's not good for themselves.
It's like, whoops, there was poison oak in that.
Whoops. Which actually is something that you have to be very concerned about, poison oak.
Yeah, we had one when I was small, and it was like, that was a life learning moment. You don't stand in the smoke if there might be poison oak.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would affect you, but it can.
Oh, yeah, you do,
yes. And it can
affect
the neighbor, too. But, yeah, it's not something we come across too much because folks do need to burn that, and they can. It's just you have to be careful doing it.
Yeah, be smart.
Yeah.
Which is another challenge, I think, a lot.
A lot of burners up here. I mean, we got probably 7,500 burn permits up here, and I'd say that's most of
really?
The air district. Yeah. In fact,
some of the commercial guys probably have got multiples. Somebody's got to be making up for me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We have what we call standard and non-standard burn permits. Standard are the 4-foot burn piles, 4-foot diameter burn piles. Think of it as, the standard burn permits are where you would have residential or something smaller.
The BlackBerry pile.
Yeah, it's not a big pile.
Yeah. It's just a burn pile.
It's just a burn pile. And partly it's because you've got close neighbors in proximity. So the amount of burning you need to do is going to be smaller, and you're not going to want to burn all day and affect someone's, which is why it's a half day. Non-standard burn permits are usually the larger burns, 10-foot diameter and bigger, and all the way up to, they're doing 30 piles that are 30 by 40 and just all
clearing burn logging sites.
Logging sites
slash
or
burns and stuff.
It could be a fire safe council. It could be one of the timber harvest companies. It could be U.S. Forest Service, Cal Fire. It does burning as well.
Now, are they doing any burning with the dead trees that are in the hills, either burned over areas or, with the snowstorm? Just the standing dead ones? Are those?
They are. It, like, for instance, Willow Creek, when it had the storm damage. It was handled in a variety of different ways. Certainly the homeowners there, you know, have a burn permit, and they can clear up whatever they have, and I'm sure that's still an ongoing type of thing. And then Cal Fire also got involved with OES and also the county, and they brought in what's called an air curtain incinerator. And it's basically like a picture of 20 or 40 foot cargo container that's open at the top and has a blower, and you actually burn it and it gets very hot. And so it's actually something that air districts generally like. And they had that in Willow Creek for a while, taking care of some of all that debris. It's got to go somewhere. It has to, you can't haul it out. And rather than burning if you think about it, homeowners burn in multiple locations all over and can create smoke. Whereas if you take it to one location that has a controller, can burn it more efficient, that's much better.
Yeah, I would think it would be more of a hot burn.
Yeah.
So there's less residual when it's done.
Very much so, yeah.
I know something. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. It's the Brian Show this morning.
That's right.
Brian Wilson's alongside this morning. He is the general manager of the Air Quality
Management.
Unified Management District.
Or just no-fist air quality.
Yeah, eventually you say enough words and you'll get them right.
That's right. It's a mouthful for us as well.
Oh, inversion. We hear about that down in the Bay Area, being still a fan of Johnny Carson. Yeah, you'd hear about inversion and what that meant down there. And, oh, my gosh, what are they going to do? Here we don't have so much, do we?
We do. And you can kind of see it. Depends on where you live. You can see it more often. Generally, we'll see it in the mornings in the winter, probably November to, say, March. You can kind of see it. And people will burn. And you can kind of tell when there's inversion because the smoke will go up and it kind of hits this invisible glass ceiling or wood smoke from their wood stoves. And it creates this inversion, which is why when we
Or when it gets down on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's basically
isn't it?
Pushing it down the warm air. And it generally will lift at a certain point in time. You know, here in the Humboldt Air Basin, probably say from Trinidad to, say, Fortuna, it'll hit a certain point in the morning, and then right around 9 or 10 it'll break. And then the wind will shift coming from, the ocean. And that's we use that to our advantage. So when people want to do prescribed burning, we'll say, okay, keep your burn, light your pile or whatever that you're going to do after a certain period of time. Otherwise, they're going to be burning. It's going to fill the area with smoke and then lift. But great. Let's just delay it a little bit.
Start at 11.
Yeah. And we approve, like I said, probably the most one of the top three approving all the burning that occurs in the state happens up here in the three counties, which is a tremendous amount. It's in probably in the 15,000 to 20,000 acre area, which is last year, about one third of what Cal Fire did all statewide.
Really?
So that's a lot of burning.
Or the other guys aren't holding up their end of the bargain.
Well, we if you think about it, too, and you're familiar with the state, there's a lot of wood here. Compared to other areas, if you're doing a burn in, say, Monterey in a chaparral, it goes really quick. You do a burn here.
Half hour and you're done.
Half hour later.
Clean it up,
gets into the 100-hour fuels kind of thing, and it'll burn overnight, and it's a whole different ballgame, which is why our smoke is bigger for a while.
What are the air currents like in the desert?
Don't know. Probably not as much inversions going back to that. It's probably, you got drier air.
I've always been curious about the folks that are inland from the metropolitan areas.
Mm.
So when we get the offshore breezes,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going that direction. Here we don't have it because we got the mountains.
Right.
And it just kind of gets trapped and we see it as fog or whatever. And, you know, two mountain ranges over, it's normal weather. Down there where they may not have quite the
right.
same.
Much more homogenous.
Yeah. What happens there if it just kind of drifts and Arizona gets it or...
Becomes what they call transport, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you can see it when there's big wildfires, especially because wildfires, you can, especially when you look at the satellite pictures, you can really see what's going on. One of the benefits we have is because we approve so much burning up here, we get to be familiar with certain areas and the patterns, the diurnal patterns or the inversions that happens. And so even though a prescribed burn might be in a small scale, say in Orleans or in Garberville, well, then when the big wildfire happens, we pretty much tend to know what's going to still happen during that day and that period because we're familiar with what's happening.
The one weather class I had at Humboldt, Dick Stepp taught it, and it was talking about how the wind or the atmosphere is very much like the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a different medium, if you will. And he would put something in and you'd kind of see how everything would react to it. But there was a capacity. And after mm-hmm. it got to a certain volume, it kind of changed again.
Right.
Same thing with the air. When we get some of these fires, you know, you kind of see a little bit as if it was during the wintertime or a slash burner or whatever. And then you get a forest fire.
And it creates its own weather.
Yeah. Does that just kind of take over, and is it a beast unto itself? And some of the knowledge and the experience that you had before kind of goes out the window, yep. And we're just.
I think everyone saw that with like the McCarr fire. I think out in if I have that remembering correctly, out in Redding, they had like little cyclonic tornadoes.
Yeah,
I can't remember what they call those, but they come from the fire itself, creating its own climate, if you will. We don't really have to deal with any of that for prescribed burns. But one of the beauties that we have when we do, going back to prescribed burns, is that we can model the smoke using the air, what's predicted for the air. So we take what NOAA has for predicted for the air, and then the amount of burning or the location that they're going to be burning, and there's these great models that we can actually look at. They do that same thing for during wildfires, so it kind of is applicable. So it helps them predict what's called an air resource advisor. The Forest Services put them out on a fire when it gets to a certain size, and we'll interact with them and use this same tool to kind of help try to figure out, okay, so what's going to happen with this massive amount of smoke, say a fire that's burning next to Willow Creek? Which way is it going to go? What's going to happen in the afternoon or morning? So we can kind of tell people, hey, we think in the afternoon it's going to be really bad because the wind direction. And these tools weren't around before. It was more of just people looking at the weather because it's so dependent on the weather than anything.
Yeah, I would think that's the craft, isn't it? The art?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to figure out the weather, and it's even harder to figure out particles floating in the air in the weather. And the prediction of what that concentration of that particle will be, which is what, the smoke that you and I impact down at ground level. It's
kind of cool.
Yeah, it's amazing that you can even do that kind of thing, which is why when people say, it's one thing to say, well, it's 60 degrees here and someone else is experiencing an Arcata, 62. Well, okay, you can't quite say the same thing for PM. Or
right.
ozone or anything else. Yeah, it's a whole different kind of thing. You can make some guesses and probably say it's generally the same. And now you can with these sensors you can put out. But, it's very hard to do that.
Now, when you say the air district or the air basin,
mm-hmm.
is that up against the mountains and just kind of – is that geographically defined?
Well, there
topographically defined? How does that –
Yeah, the state of California has broken up the state into different air basins, if you will. And the air basin that we have, we're part of what's called the North Coast Air Basin. And
I think we've heard that for decades.
Yeah, and I would, as we all know, especially if you've traveled from here to, Redding, you go through so many different microclimates up and down and terrain. It's hard to even imagine anything is even uniform at all. But they have placed this North Coast Air Base in. Is North Coast is Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity. It's also Mendocino. It's also Northern Sonoma, and does not include Lake County. That's considered the North Coast Air Basin in the Health and Safety Code, you know, the legislative part. But what we consider is more true, a separate one, which is what I brought up, was North Coast or the Humboldt Air Basin, which is like from Trinidad to, say, Scotia perhaps, and maybe as far inland as Blue Lake.
I know what you're saying, the Fog Bank.
Yes, the Fog Bank and where people are.
There we go. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to several cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Wilson from the Air District.
Another Brian.
See, we're just kind of boiling this thing down. Pretty soon you'll be the guy full of hot air, and that's it. And then they'll think we're twins.
Oh. Yes, but one of us is tall with a higher voice. So.
Yes, and one has hair.
Yeah. Good thing it's radio.
You know, just kind of let that one slide. Yeah. We're seeing an awful lot of increased restrictions in environmental related areas year in, year out, decade in, decade out.
Right.
Are you guys and gals experiencing the same on the enforcement side or the standard side, or is that kind of a different area, the code enforcement side?
Well, there's always new regulations coming out. As an air district that's up here, we enforce local, state, and federal rules. In fact, one of the things that's unique about this air district is that we enforce federal rules like for asbestos, what's called a NESHAP, an NESHAP for hazardous pollutants. Unique, there's not that many air districts that do, and certainly there's always new regulations coming out, therefore our district has to enforce them, perhaps, or can look to whether or not we want to enforce them.
Selective enforcement.
On some things.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yeah. But mostly we're the regulator. You know, we try to straddle that fence and not overregulate. And like I was mentioning, I think one of the reasons we float a little bit under the radar is we don't try to overregulate. We try to do what is necessary to keep us in attainment and not too much more. And striking
compliance,
that balance.
Compliance.
Yeah, and striking that balance of trying to do what people, you know, voted, let politicians in place, and to put regulations in place, and then we just follow them. In some cases, we can actually do something a little different or morph it a little bit, but generally, it's most air districts are that way. Other states, you'll see DEQ, so like Oregon DEQ or Nevada. It's one statewide environmental quality.
Oh, really?
With different offices, whereas in California, got to be different. We have 35 air districts. We're one of the unified ones. There's only five like that, and then we're one of the bigger rural ones. So it's a little bit different, but that gives us flexibility because the problems that are here aren't the same elsewhere.
Right. I can't imagine you trying to enforce air quality standards that Los Angeles has.
Right. We don't need to have electric lawnmowers and other things yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to do what?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, that would ensure turnover in your position.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are regulations that are coming down that will affect our area that we won't have control over. One is called SORE. That acronym, SORE, and it's going to be affecting weed whackers and emergency generators and all these things that have these small engines, and that's going to be coming out of the Air Resources Board, and it'll be a statewide, and the only thing kind of our air district might play a role is, you know, giving out grants to folks to try to, you know, manage this, because what do you do if you're,
you got a weed whacker.
Yeah,
you got
or
a weed
gardener.
Whacker,
yeah. You can't carry 30 batteries with you and everything else.
Right.
But you can do something. So,
or a generator.
Or generator.
An
right.
emergency generator. Okay, look. Right. You know, I got 7 days. I'm out.
Right. We're a lot different than Bay Area.
Yeah.
You know, and rightly so.
So there is some recognition of that.
Yes. that represents and plays out in our rules over time that the board's voted on.
And do you have a board, or are you an arm of the various governmental entities that you are representing?
We're an upper-level government body. No, it's we have a governing board, and we have two people from the Board of Supervisors in Humboldt County, and one from Del Norte, and one from Trinity, and then one from the cities. So we have five people on our governing board, and then we have a quasi-judicial hearing board to appeal things to. But, it's a governing board that meets regularly and just like a lot of the entities.
Hopefully not too regularly.
Yeah, about every other month.
Let you do your job, yeah. Thanks for coming by.
Been fun. Thank you.
All right. Nice to see you. See everybody else tomorrow.